right, let's go ahead and get started. I want to begin by just taking you ahead in time a little bit to a day maybe not so long away from now for some of us. But on this particular day, you get up early in the morning. Nobody else is up in the house. You walk in the kitchen and the coffee's already made, and you sit down at the table with a cup of coffee just like you like it. No one's stirring. It's a beautiful day outside. Your kids are grown. You've retired from your career. And on this day, you just take some time to reflect back. And you know how you can do. You sort of pop in the mental VHS tape into the VCR of your mind, and you begin to play back some of your life. And you think about, you know, the good times you had with your kids, perhaps your relationship with your spouse, some of the things that were part of your journey in your career. And I just wonder, for a lot of people who are in ministry, if on a day like that, there will end up being a day of regret. And the regret, I think, for a lot of people who will have given life in ministry is the regret that they didn't spend more time personally developing people and reproducing their life in others. You know, I'm not retired, not through with my days of ministry. We still have kids at home. But I have occasionally played the tape of regret. In fact, the single greatest regret of the first 15 years of my life as a pastor is not personally investing my time in raising up leaders. I was so busy and taken and consumed with simply running the organization and machine of the church that I did not develop and invest my life personally in the lives of the leaders around me. And that's the regret tape for me. But I determined that that would not mark the rest of my life and the rest of my ministry. And so here's a statement from my pastor, from Pastor Rick Warren, in his book, The Purpose-Driven Church. He says, "The most critical factor in a ministry isn't the idea, but the leadership." Now, it's not that new ideas don't matter. It's not that innovations aren't important. It's not that process isn't strategic. It's just that good leaders matter more. And I read this statement some time ago. It says, "Without a leader, good ideas mysteriously transform themselves into bad realities." And if you are a pastor or a church leader, you know that is true. I cannot tell you how many times as a young pastor I went off to a conference and heard great ideas that worked in some other city, in some other church, in some other denomination, in some other way. But it didn't in my setting and in my context, in my church. In fact, that good idea, because we didn't have the proper leadership value, became a bad reality. Listen to the words of Joel Comiskey in his book, Leadership Explosion. He says, "I've researched small groups around the world, and here's what I've discovered. Small groups are not the answer. In fact, there's a danger in thinking that small groups are the answer. Small groups come and go. They rise and fall over time. And unless small group members are converted into small group leaders, little long-term fruit remains. Churches do not reap the harvest because they have small groups. They reap the harvest because they have harvest workers." And here's this quote that I highlighted for you. "Churches that have no plan to develop leaders have by default planned to lose the harvest." So it could very well be true that for those of us who sit in this workshop, in this room today, that the single most important thing that we give our time to is not sitting in staff meetings, is not even what we do on the weekend meetings or services. It may not be the counseling that we do, but it very well may be the leaders that we develop. And so what we want to do during this workshop is really talk about how we at Saddleback Church raise up and develop leaders and harvest workers at our church. And I think in order to do that, it might be helpful just to give you a brief snapshot of kind of where we are in terms of group life that will help set the context for the discussion today. And I share with you not out of any sense of ego or boasting, but more just to set the context for you so that you'll understand just what we're up against and then how we approach leadership based on that. Saddleback Church was started in 1980 by our pastor, who was the founding pastor and still the pastor today, Rick Warren. He and his wife moved to Southern California, began the church really in their home, and has been there now for 23 years. The church grew to 10,000 people before it ever had its first piece of property or its first building, and met in 73 different locations in those early years, just from week to week. Sometimes, literally, they would just stand up on Sunday and say, next week we're not meeting here, we're meeting somewhere else. And met in a lot of different locations. The church has grown to where now our average weekend attendance is somewhere in the 16,000 range. And small groups in early years were really not a vital part of how Saddleback did church. And I think one of the things that happened is that we began to see and feel the need for people to connect in community, that the front door was wide open. A lot of people were coming to Christ and a lot of people coming to the church and they were hearing the gospel, but it was not really a sticking point for them. And so about 4 to 5 years ago, the church began a more significant direction in the area of embracing groups. And at that time, it's hard to get clear data on this, but the best I can determine, they were somewhere in the vicinity of maybe 100 groups. They were loosely organized. It was not a cohesive strategy. It really was just kind of groups formed by accident and by people coming into our church who had some experience with that and sort of started groups on their own. But in the last 3 to 4 years, there have been a significant push toward groups to where, as Mike mentioned earlier, now we're at about 900 groups. And this past fall, we do once a year a spiritual growth campaign. And during that time, we have a strong emphasis on getting people into groups. And we ask people to at least give a try of a 6 to 8 week group. And this past fall, in October of 2001, in that 1 week, we launched some 230 new groups in 1 week, which obviously presented a lot of challenges to us. One of the funny things that happened was that we ask every group in our church to do this curriculum that we had for the campaign. And we said, in order to get the curriculum, you have to come to a 1 hour orientation meeting in order just to get the curriculum, which is a video curriculum. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a little bit. Well, what we found when they came is we found 87 groups we didn't even know existed in our church, just because they had to come and pick up the curriculum. And the reality is, quite frankly, some of the groups in our church, they don't want to be on the radar. They're happy, they're meeting. They don't want us messing with their good thing. And they know if they show up at a meeting and sign a card, they're going to get communicated with and hear from us. And some of them, quite frankly, don't want that. This fall, we are trying something that is a new thing for us. And that is, Pastor Rick is coming out this fall with a book called The Purpose-Driven Life. It was actually just completed this past week. And he is going to be sharing that with our church this fall. And so we've invited other churches to participate in this campaign called 40 Days of Purpose. And right now we have about 1,400 churches that are going to be going through that with us this fall. And it starts with a national simulcast of Pastor Rick sharing basically his life message on the purpose-driven life. And we can't gather all of our people together for one big meeting because we just don't have any capacity and room for that. So what we're doing is we're doing that in a decentralized fashion this year. And we are going to be doing that in 3,000 homes and launching, hopefully, 3,000 short-term small groups this fall. Well, all of that, again, just to say the challenge of leadership for us is a huge one. And again, I want to be really clear on this. We are just now really beginning to figure out how to do this. If you were to come to our church and you were really to dig down inside the infrastructure of our leadership structure, you would find some gaping holes. There are some things that we are not yet doing. And part of it has been that in the last 3 years, we have moved masses of people into groups. And now we are going back and trying to retrofit them with health. And, you know, leaders that are Christians, for example. And, minor issues like that. And sometimes, quite frankly, it just feels overwhelming and it feels chaotic. But sometimes I think that's what the book of Acts was. The book of Acts was not a nice, neat system. It was often the church reacting to what the Spirit of God was doing. And when you react, and when there is that little bit of sense that it is out of control, it does create issues. But I would rather deal with the issues of trying to retrofit those groups with good leadership now rather than not being able to have people in groups because we didn't have enough leaders to go around. And I just am so grateful that you're here this morning because you care about developing leadership in your own life and in the lives of the people that you lead. And I think that's such a high value, and I want to honor you for doing that. And if you've been leading for any length of time at all, you know that can be very hard and frustrating. I often tell people, the ministry would be a breeze if it weren't for people. If you didn't have to mess with people, it would just be so easy. And yet, it's where the joy is. You know, it's one of those paradoxes of life that life's greatest highs and life's deepest, profound rewards come in relationships. And yet life's most stressful, frustrating moments come in the same relationships. And yet that's all part of group life, and it's all part of leadership development. And there have to be times, I'm sure, like me, where you wonder, is this making any difference? Have you ever tried and mentored a leader and then you get 6 months down the road and go, what are they doing? Is none of this making a difference? Is none of it sticking? And the one thing that sort of gives me some hope in this whole issue is that, you know, Jesus didn't exactly have the most stellar small group either. He didn't have the cream of the intellectual crop in the disciples. And so sometimes I find hope in that and think if Jesus could do it with the group he had, maybe there's hope for us in some of what we're dealing with. So with that context, let me just kind of jump in and let's talk about three different templates this morning for leadership development. And the first one I want to begin with, and I think it's the appropriate place, is a values template. What are some of the values that drive how we think about leadership? And this has been so helpful for me to come and do this conference because it really helped me to clarify not just what we say are our values, but are they really values? And I tell you how you know is whether or not there are practices that flow out of those values. If there aren't any practices, if it's just good sermon material, it's probably not a value. But if there's practices that flow out of it, in group life or in leadership development, then it probably is real. So let me give you some that I think are becoming more true of us. Number one is a high value and honor of those who lead groups. I think the people in your church and the people that you lead know whether or not you really value leaders, or whether or not you value activity or you value programs. I love what Michael Slaughter says in his book, Unlearning Church. He says, the key role in the life of the church is the leader of the group of 10. And so as I read that statement, I asked myself, is that true at Saddleback? And I'd say, not yet, but it's getting there. Where the people who we really celebrate are the people on the front lines doing ministry out there in the neighborhoods, in the community. They're really the shepherd and pastor of that group. And we have this tension. And this session, I'm not going to give you the conference answers. I want to give you the real scoop, okay? So one of the things that we experience, and it's a tension right now on our own staff, is that there's a certain kind of element who believes that we need to champion sort of the professional clergy. And let me tell you how that works out. On the weekends, you know, there's the badges and the guys who work the patio and who are out there who are the paid staff members. And some of us are saying, why do we need that distinction? That small group leader is every bit as called and as much of a pastor as we are. Let's celebrate them, give them the same responsibility, same privilege, because in reality, to the 10 or 20 people that they lead, they're more the pastor than some guy who just wears a badge, and in some ways more equipped to do that. And so the question I ask is that true in our church? Do we hear stories of leaders? Do we tell stories of leaders? Are they celebrated? Because if they really are the soldiers on the front lines, they're the ones that deserve the medals. In battle, we give purple hearts to men and women who make sacrifices on the front lines, not to generals sitting in the war room. So in our churches, Who really gets honored? Who gets celebrated? Who gets talked about? Who are the heroes in the congregation? Another value that is true for us is we have a value of getting people in the leadership game early. Quite honestly, again, going to Saddleback, it scared me to death when I started digging into our leadership system and seeing who could be a leader in our church. And it still scares me to death in some respects. But I have seen the fruit. And it is so exciting to me to see that person who doesn't know a lot yet, who is in many respects just getting going in their journey, but they have been raised up to be a leader, a facilitator, and they are at least in the leadership game. And some of them are growing, and the reason they are growing is because they got thrown into being a leader in some respects prematurely, but nonetheless, they are at least in the game. I like what Howard Snyder says in a book called The Radical Wesley, talking about the Wesley movement. He says, the Wesley movement was a grassroots level movement. And then he goes on to ask, who were these people? Not the educated or the wealthy with time on their hands, but laboring men and women, husbands and wives, and young folks with little or no training, but with spiritual gifts and eagerness to serve. And then get this last phrase. Not only did Wesley reach the masses, he made leaders of thousands of them. Uneducated, uninitiated, not necessarily long-term believers, but he got them in the game, and he got them accountable, he got them growing, and he got them leading at a small level. And I think there's value in that. Sometimes I feel and sense that in the church, we wait too long and have such a high bar of qualification and standards of leadership that we keep a lot of people out of the game who just simply aren't there yet. And what will help them to get here is to get them with some responsibility. Now, it doesn't mean that there's not qualification. It doesn't mean that we hand them everything in terms of leadership, but we are saying there are some roles that they can begin to take. And what we've also discovered is that some of our best leaders are unlikely leaders. I think of a guy in our former church. His name was Ray, and Ray worked at the university. Just to meet him, you wouldn't think this guy would be a great leader. But he just was willing and available, and he was so committed and dedicated, and he and his wife became some of our best small group leaders. An unlikely leader, but a guy who was willing to get in the game fairly early on, and he has grown and matured and developed as a leader in unbelievable ways. But it was partly because someone gave him permission, encouraged him, and then supported him as he got in the game early on in his journey. The next thing is to look for reluctant leaders. We're not necessarily looking for the guys who are always that ambitious to say, give me something to lead. I want to be in charge. We're looking for the people who go, you know, I sense maybe God's in this, but I'm just not sure. And I feel inadequate. And I don't know if I have what it takes. One of the things that we say around Saddleback is we like leaders with sweaty palms who are just a little nervous about that. And what we have found is two things. One is that when that is true of them, they tend to be a little more dependent on the Holy Spirit. And secondly, we find that they are really hungry for leadership coaching. They are anxious to get whatever we can give them. And you know, if you've been a pastor, you know what it's like to go back and try to retrofit a group or a leader who doesn't want anything you have to offer. They got their way of doing it. They got their system. They're not interested in making any change. And one of the mistakes that we made in our transition in the previous church that I pastored was we started with some existing leadership that we thought would become the core. And what we found is that some of those people just couldn't make the jump. Good people, love the Lord, but so entrenched in kind of the current system that they really couldn't abandon it to embrace a new set of values and a new set of practices. And if I had to do all over again, I would have gone after some younger, go-getter, teachable leaders. Maybe not as experienced, maybe not as mature, but people who are willing to be coachable and teachable. The next one is a really high value for us, and that is look for the organic and natural over the programmatic. Now let me explain what we mean by that. I want you to imagine rain on a mountain. And as the rain comes down the mountain, it follows and finds a natural path to go. When it comes to a rock going down the mountain, it just goes around it. It finds a natural path to flow. When you put a seed in the ground and give it the right environment, it naturally, organically grows. Let me give you a passage of scripture that talks about this from Mark chapter 4. He said, "This is what the kingdom of God is like. A man scatters seed on the ground night and day. Whether he sleeps or gets up, the seed sprouts and grows, though he does not know how. All by itself, the soil produces grain." You got to circle the words, All, night and day, whether he sleeps, the seed sprouts and grows, though he does not know how. The does not know how. It is actually the word automatic. All by itself, in verse 28, is the word automatic. And he's saying, naturally, organically, it just happens. And here's what we mean when we say that in terms of leadership development. We are looking for ways where leaders develop more naturally rather than through prescribed programs or curriculum. We have had almost, I'd say, limited and little success in trying to get our leaders to come to a centralized training class on our church campus. Commutes really affect that, just the pace of life, where we live. Sometimes it's a maturity issue that our people just haven't been willing to give as much of that. And so we're trying to ask, what are some ways that we can go right into the group life itself and naturally help emerge up automatically leadership development, rather than saying the way we develop leaders at Saddleback is on Tuesday nights we have a class in room 402 where we do training. That's prescribed, and it's effective, and in some churches that works really well. I have a friend of mine in Austin who runs a small group ministry. They have leader training every week. He has a high percentage of turnout. That's awesome. It doesn't work where we are. And so how do we do that in a more organic fashion? And let me give you one example. One example is that we have this thing that we call rotating leadership. So what we do in our group time facilitation is we're encouraging our leaders, find somebody else who next week would just facilitate the discussion for the group. Or maybe it's not they take the whole night, but you just give them a portion. Say, hey, would you take the this section of the evening and just kind of lead the discussion? One of the things that we found is rotating homes helps rotate leadership, because then when we say it's at your house next week, by the way, would you just lead the meeting next week? And we're finding that by doing that, we are getting some leaders in the game taking a small baby step more naturally than by saying, you got to go through this class in order to get qualified in order to lead a discussion. Now, again, it has to be something that they can do. And so we set the bar low and we give them a step that is very achievable, but we want to do that. Another thing that we do is we do this thing called spiritual partners. And so in our groups, what we encourage is to partner up in kind of an accountability relationship, just someone that you're going to connect with on a little deeper level beyond the group meeting. Now, we could have a spiritual partner program at our church, and we could sign people up off the weekend and through our worship bulletin, but we want the more organic way. And we think the more organic way is just say, is there a friend that you could find in your group? Somebody you already know. It's not another relationship you have to manage. It's not another meeting you have to go to. It's not a church-driven program that has to be funded and resourced by staff personnel. It's in the water system. And we're looking for those kind of more organic triggers inside group life that are going to help motivate and mobilize leaders in their journey. Next is, have less top-down, more step-up. And here's how this plays out. Also, the second thing is less title, more team. And here's how this plays out for us. We have found, I don't know if this is true in your setting, and we can have some Q&A here in a little bit, but one of the things that we have found is that words really matter and title descriptions really matter in our church. And sometimes, quite frankly, it scares people off. Now, let me give you some examples. When we use the word apprentice, it scares people off. people do not, in our church, have kind of resisted that passively and just go, not me. Don't sign me up for that. But what we have found is that if we give them just a role and say, would you mind helping with the prayer and praise report every week? Would you just kind of help keep track of where we are in terms of worship? And we're doing some things to develop them without giving them a formal title or position or long-term commitment. Another thing, another area where this has happened is we did something because, again, we're based off of what's called a purpose-driven model. We thought in order to help install purposes into our groups, we would have what we call purpose champions. So we'd have a purpose champion for discipleship and a purpose champion for evangelism and all that in the group. Well, what we found is that nobody wanted it. They did not want to be the champion. That felt like job, title, position, come to a meeting, get training. So what we now have done is, again, tried to look for a little bit less of the hierarchical and just say, could you help work on this in our group? Would you just help our group do that? Not an official job description, but is a small step that helps people. Again, not as hierarchical, more just, would you mind stepping up and helping us do this? We're going also more after co-leaders of groups, a plurality of leadership within group life, so that it's not just the one top-down leader. Next is, look for what we call and are developing called smart curriculum. And by smart curriculum, we mean things that are easy to use. You don't have to be a scholar. You don't have to be a longtime Christian. It is something that an average person could pick up and lead. But also by smart, we mean the curriculum itself helps develop your values inside the group life meeting. So that it's not just about doing a Bible study, but rather, how are we doing that Bible study in such a way that it actually helps people develop leadership? And how does it help promote, in our setting, we would say, how does it help promote the purposes of God, the five purposes of God, into that person's life? And we'll evaluate curriculum based on that. And one of the things that we have done, and it's really been more of a reaction than a proactive strategy, by starting so many groups and having so many new leaders in groups, one of the things that scares me to death is to think about what is taught in our groups on a week-to-week basis. The heresy that is probably out there under the name of Saddleback Church, it would just make your skin crawl. So here's what we've done. We said, in order to help that, we don't have a midweek service anymore. I'm going to talk about that a little bit tonight. But we have said, rather than pouring energy and time and staff into staffing a midweek service on campus, we want to take the teaching and deliver it into the group. And so what we do is we produce video curriculum. And the video curriculum basically takes our teaching pastors, we put them on video, we do a 20-minute message that is for the group. It's done in a studio so that it feels like that pastor is just sitting in the living room with those people, and he addresses our groups during the... So it's not done for the masses, it's done for the group, but it's Bible teaching, and then we provide them written curriculum that allows them then to discuss the passage, allows them to discuss application, allows them to go deeper in relationships, to share personally as it relates to the passage. So that what we feel like we're getting is really the best of both worlds. We're getting the wonderful dynamic of a home group experience, but we also are being able to deliver teaching that we have confidence in. The thing we're working on now is a track with our teaching that would say to our people, as a small group, if you're going to be together for these next 3 years, here is a track that we would recommend. At least once a year, we want you to take kind of a doctrinal kind of systematic theology type study in your class. At least once a year, we want you doing something about relationships. We want you to be sure that you do a curriculum that is about group life so you understand how you're to relate together in community. And developing a track that is also developmental and for their growth that is curriculum based. So look for smart curriculum. We have a saying around our church, if you have a VCR, you can be a star. We call it plug and play curriculum. And we did some focus groups out of this. I told you that last October we launched 230 groups in 1 week. At the end of that campaign, we did focus groups, and the number one thing that gave new leaders confidence to be able to lead for that short term was the video curriculum. Here's a secondary benefit we found. The leader doesn't have to spend as much time in preparation. Now they can spend time on people, which we like, which we really like. Next, value. Have multiple delivery systems for training. This goes back to something we talked about a little bit earlier, and I've just listed for you here several different options. One would be centralized classes. We do an orientation for leaders on our campus. Now, one thing we are doing is we're doing it around our weekend services, so people are not coming another night of the week. They come to a worship service, they stay for another hour, and we do our training at that time. Leadership tapes, leadership curriculum that goes to them. Leader lifters. Here's one thing we're actually doing for the very first time today back in Saddleback. We're producing leadership lifters on the video. And what that means is that when the leader sits down, here's the preparation we ask him to do. Would you watch the 5-minute leadership lifter before you go to your group tonight? And the leadership lifter is simply a way to encourage them and give them some coaching tips on how to lead the group that night. Things like, okay, tonight we want to encourage you to maybe take a step with doing this. Or tonight's about encouragement, and here's a way that you might accomplish that. Or we're going to set up the passage for you. Or we might ask them, when's the last time you got somebody else to facilitate the group for the evening? So, again, rather than bringing them to a class, we're saying, you're going to your group anyway. Would you take 5 minutes just to watch this and to get a leadership lifter on that? Another great thing that we're discovering is what's called, the next one, Leadership Toolbox. Pastor Rick has a ministry called Ministry Toolbox. And what we found is that we have a website, but a website tends to stay static and people won't keep coming to a website to get information. So what we do is we get permission marketing and then we push email leadership materials to them. So what happens, and what Pastor Rick has done with the Ministry Toolbox, is say to pastors, you sign up for this and then it comes to you every week because you've asked for it. And what we find is people read it if they've asked for it and they get it. And what it has is several opportunities that link them then to other articles and stories and research and things like that. Well, we're beginning to develop the same thing for leaders. To say, if you're a leader in our church, you'll sign up for this. We'll give you resources on, you know, ideas for coaching the leaders underneath you or ideas for ministry projects for your small group. So it's another way to deliver leadership coaching and resourcing. Obviously, things like coaches huddles, modeling, taking a leader to do ministry with you. That's the as-you-go principle. And then just life-on-life kinds of things. Here's a little idea that we did that worked really well at our division leader retreat recently. Because we want to raise the value of our coaches and leaders spending time with their people in an informal setting, what we did to our division leaders is we gave them a packet of gift certificates. We gave them a packet of gift certificates that included Starbucks, Blockbuster movie rental, and theater passes. And what we said is the only stipulation for getting these is you have to use them with your leaders. We want you in the lives of your leaders. And so go get a cup of coffee. Have them over to your house and watch a movie for the night and just spend the evening together. That's a leadership coaching system, and it's very informal, but it's very effective, and another way that we try to go about doing leadership. And the list could be 100 things long, but look for multiple delivery systems. Next, install reproduction in the water system of leadership development. Here's how we're doing that. One way is we're asking our people to do mentoring in and through their groups. And so we're making it just part of kind of the system of how we do group life, and that from day one, when a person becomes a Christian and they get personally discipled, in the very first 5 weeks of what they get is they get a whole lesson on the value of reproduction. And we think that's really important. We don't want it to be a surprise to them later that God's call on their life is not just to grow, but now then to reproduce their life in somebody else. And so from day one, we're saying to them, God's plan for your life is that you are going to begin to reproduce your life in the lives of other people. So install reproduction as a value from early on in the relationship. So those are some of the key values that drive then the practices that we have put into our system. Now, let me take you just a minute to a relational template for leadership development. And I want to start with just a couple of premises that really serve as the foundation for kind of how we view relationally how I am to relate leader to leader. Number one is this: you don't influence out of position, but out of relationship and respect. Or as Bill was talking about last night, you influence out of character. So just because I got the position doesn't mean anything. In fact, here's a problem that we're facing. I don't know if you guys have this, but we launch new groups, and then we assign that leader a coach. The coach then will call the leader, and you know what? Most of the time, the leader doesn't even return the phone call. You know why? No relationship, no felt need. In fact, honestly, the attitude that we get from some of our leaders is, why do I need you? You know what? And then again, we've complicated it because sometimes the coach calls the leader to go, oh, by the way, we're doing this. Can you be sure that your group is aware? And it feels like what we call them for is to ask them to do something, not to invest in them. And so what we're learning is that if we really want to raise healthy leaders, we don't influence out of position. Oh, by the way, I'm your coach. But rather, hey, could we go out and just get coffee? I'd like to know more about you and get to know you and find out how I can help you accomplish what you want to accomplish in your group. Not how you can get on the page with what Saddleback Church is all about, but how we can serve you and come alongside you and help you because you're the one that shepherds that group, not us. The second foundational premise is more time spent with fewer people equals greater impact. We impress at a distance, but we impact up close and personal. Now, one of the realities then that means is that you've got to get the span of care down enough so that the people who lead leaders don't have too many leaders that they can't build into them relationally. And here's what happens in our system, because again, our system is young and the span of care is out of whack. We have division leaders and coaches who are over too many other leaders. And what we're finding, and actually what we're coaching our division leaders on, is you go find the ones who want it and need it for now. We'll get to the others later. But right now, focus on the people that you can go deep with. We would rather, if you've got 20 groups under you, 20 leaders, we'd rather you go deep with the 5 or 6 who really need you and who really want it than go shallow with 20 who aren't going to do anything with it. And so go deep with a few. We impact up close and personal, and more time spent with fewer people does equal greater impact. In a new book that Wolfgang Simpson has written called Houses That Changed the World, listen to what he says. He says, the core issue is this. We may want to train new leaders, but God the Father wants us to simply raise spiritual sons. To raise a son is more than just teaching him a few lessons. As anyone with children knows, there is no pain-free parenting. It is the most engaging task I know. This is the price we need to pay for spiritual generations to come. And then he says this, cheap training shortcuts, emergency crash courses, relationally uninvolving seminars, and purely academic efforts are about as effective as quick-fix parenting. Here's what I think he's saying. You want to really develop leaders, it's going to cost you something in terms of relationship. That it has to be a strong relational component if we want to get where we want to go. So here's how we're beginning to think about relationships in terms of spiritual leadership development. And here's 3 questions that we use to frame this discussion. Number one is, who are you? So that if I have a leader underneath me, let's suppose I'm a small group coach, and under me I have, let's say, 10 leaders of small groups. Here's how we're coaching our coaches to deal with their leaders. And the place to start, these build relationally, the place to start is simply the who are you place. so that the focus is on relationship and friendship. So that the first time a leader hears from me, it is not about my agenda and the three things I need from you as a coach. Like, the first phone call the leader gets from me is not, could you give me an up-to-date roster of everybody in your group? The leader's going, that doesn't benefit me. Rather, the first phone call from the coach needs to be, listen, I'm really excited about being able to work with you, and I'm here to support you, and I just wonder, could we get together? Just want to get to know you. And so the focus is relationship and friendship. Now here's, again, I've just given you a smattering of possibilities of some ways that we would encourage this. Just praying with them and for them. Praying on their behalf. We find our leaders are thrilled when their coach just calls them and says, hey, how can I pray for you? Yeah, but what else do you want? Nothing. Just want to know how I can pray for you. Wow. Stock goes up for the coach in the eyes of the leader. You know what else that does? It teaches the leader what he needs to do with his own group members. We model, and then it gets trickled down through the group. Things like just being interested in their family. I would be, again, afraid to know how many of our coaches don't even know the name of the spouse of some of our leaders, maybe anything about their family. So the whole point here is just that it's all about building relationship first. Then we move from that to how are you? First, it's just getting the relational credibility in place. Then it begins to move into how are you personally? Let's talk about where you are with the Lord. Let me hear your story about how you came to Christ. Do you know what your spiritual gifts are? Are you operating within those gifts? How are things going with the family? What is your relational world like? Are you managing too much? Are you on the verge of burnout? Spending too many nights out? Or where are you in these areas of transparency, accountability, personal growth? But again, that has to be earned. Now, I think when we look at this, you go, well, no kidding. This is a no-brainer. But I submit to you that this is not how often we do it in the life of the church. It's how we would do it if we wanted to build a friendship with somebody. We just begin to build the relationship, then we go to a little more personal, and then we might go to even more personal where we do some coaching with them. But in the church, often what seems natural intuitively and relationally doesn't get installed into the system. So here's some other areas that gets practical. Just sit down and share with them what God is teaching you out of the Word. Notice that this has little program feel to it. This is about a leader sitting down with another leader and just sharing life and talking about, hey, here's what God is doing in my life. This is what I got out of this passage. Share some personal struggles and victories. Because as you model authenticity and transparency, they will begin to open up. And again, it models it for them doing it with their whole church. Number three is the value of the health assessment, which is a way for us to kind of just share, how am I doing against the five purposes? And we have questions for each of those five purposes for us to assess how I'm doing. And so if I'm a coach, maybe just sitting down with that leader and going through the health assessment together and then talking about how they're growing spiritually. So first it's about who are you, then it's about how are you, and not how can I help your group, but how can I just help you, and not how can I help you as a leader, but how can I help you as a Christian? How can I help you grow as a Christian? And then the third one is, all right, now, where can I help you? In terms of development and equipping for what you're doing in your leadership in a small group, where can I help you? Now, here's what I'd like to have you do. You should have in your handout a little sheet that's, it's called the Mentoring Leaders Handout. Do you have that? Should have some kind of a grid on it. And what I'd like you to do is simply to take a couple of minutes and fill this out. And what I want you to do is I want you to think of at least one leader that you have, or maybe think of five or six, and I want you to put an X in the box that describes where you are with that leader. Are you at the place where really right now it should be just about who are you? Or have you moved past that now to how are you and getting into their life a little bit? Or are you at the equipping stage? And then what I would encourage you to think about then is, what is a next step you could take with that leader in the area where you have identified you are relationally with him. So would you do that real quick? Why don't you take just a minute, fill that out, and then we're going to talk about that in just a second. Just somebody you lead, maybe not formally, maybe not officially in some capacity, but somebody that you lead. All right, could I ask you again? I know some of you are kind of spread out here, but if you could just group up with one or two people, and I'd like you just to process this for just a minute, about a leader that you have in mind. Maybe you don't have to use their name or anything, but just a leader that you have in mind, and talk about where you are with them and what could be a next step that you could help them begin to grow in that area. Maybe it's just right now relationally, and you've got to figure out how are we going to continue to go deeper in our relationship. So why don't you spend just a minute or two talking with each other about how you're going to do that. All right. You know, one of the most effective things I think that I've done in years past is simply to just take a leader through a book. I mean, it's a simple thing. You read it together, you discuss it, but it has profound impact. And I've given you some recommendations for mentoring. Now, these come out of our system, which is very young. I mean, these are, in some of these, they are very simple kinds of books. But with our leaders, they're making a difference because they are not very advanced or mature. Now, you may have a whole different set, but here's five that we use and recommend. Some of them are basic leadership. Some of them are just spiritual habits. Pursuit of God is kind of a classic, just about, you know, pursuing and following the Lord. But it's a great step to take in terms of equipping the people underneath you. I think sometimes we make this more complex than it has to be when we think about developing our leaders. Well, let me move now, if I can, to the last section, and that is a template for leadership development that is about their role as a leader. So we've talked about what are the values behind what we do and how we develop leaders. We've talked a little bit about how we want them to approach it relationally. Now we want to talk about, okay, what do I do as a leader? And this is really kind of the template that we use. And again, based on our particular model, we would use the five purposes. And the five purposes are really what we do. And then this diagram shows you kind of, this is who we do it with. You know, a small group member, a leader, coach, a division leader, and an area leader. That's the framework that we use at Saddleback for our span of care for groups. And what we want to talk about in this last few minutes is just what is it that a leader does? And in our case, again, it is built around the five purposes. We look for every way we can to reinforce the value of the purposes in people's lives. And so here's the first one, is mutual care, which is the purpose of fellowship. Now, let me show you what this has to do with leadership development. And we've hinted at this already, but this just helps us to get clear in our mind. We would say our first practice that we want to see and role that we want people to play in developing leaders under them is relationship. And we've already talked a lot about that. But here's the question that we ask. What are you doing to develop relationally with your leaders? And this then becomes sort of the standard of measurement by which we measure success. How do we know whether we've developed a leader, a healthy leader? It's the answer to these five questions I'm going to give you in this session. If they're doing those five things, and those five things are growing in the leaders underneath them, we would say that's a healthy leader. It becomes the measurement for success for us. So we would say to our leaders, if you're not involved with the leaders under you, if you're not involved with your members, then you're not being very successful. It's not just about how well you lead the meeting. It's not just about how well you facilitate discussion. It's not just about how well you manage conflict. How much are you in the lives of the people that you lead? And so we're constantly doing things to try to get them to make that a core practice of what they do as a leader. The second one is about the purpose of discipleship. And we're going to get into more of this tonight, but you see, Pastor Rick's first book is called The Purpose-Driven Church. This summer's coming out, The Purpose-Driven Life. And I think one of the things that we've discovered over the years, that at the end of the day, The purposes are really not about the church only. They are about the life. That what God wants in the five purposes of the church, God wants in the five purposes of every life. And that what we're about is trying to drill down in the lives of our people so that the DNA of every single person at Saddleback has in it the five purposes of God. And so when we talk about leaders, it's also about the five purposes. The five purposes run through every stream of every system within our church. So that there is not a place, there is not a system, there's not a program in our church that isn't somehow part of those five purposes. In Larry Weber's new book called The Provocateur, the subtitle of his book is How a New Generation of Leaders Are Building Communities, Not Just Companies. And he likens the effective leader in our generation to a Sherpa guide. And here's what he says. The Sherpa guide is one who is able to conduct others along an uncertain path, developing individual skills and strengthening commitment at every step. That, to me, is a good description of the role you play in discipling the leaders underneath you. A couple of pages later, he says this. The Sherpa guide says to people, take my hand, we're going on a journey. I know what's ahead, I've been there, and I'm going to show you wonderful things. That's the spirit in which we want our coaches and division leaders, whatever, to mentor and disciple the leaders underneath them. Is not to say, I'm the expert, I've got this all figured out, but rather to say, let's go hand in hand, this is a journey, and the only thing that gives me credibility in your life is that I've just been a little further down the road than you are. But we're in this together. And this is not so much about the curriculum that you use as it is about helping them take their next spiritual step, about coaching them in how they continue to grow in their faith. The third area is the area of ministry. How do I motivate the leaders under me? And how, here's the question we ask, how are you helping your leaders discover and develop their shape for life? And shape for us is a little acrostic that says God made you with spiritual gifts. He gave you a heart with it, which are passions. He gave you abilities, personality, and experiences. And within those five things that God has in your life, out of that, he wants you to minister. Spiritual gifts, heart, which is passions, abilities, personality, and experiences. This is about gifting and ministry. And so how can I, if you have the gift of teaching, how can I help you to grow in that gift? How is that getting expressed in your group? How can I coach you to do that in a better way? And how can I motivate that within your life? The fourth leadership question that we have is around the area of evangelism and reproduction. And really here we have two questions, and they are this. How are you helping your leaders share their faith? And how are you helping your leaders reproduce their lives in others? Evangelism is a core value. We have some groups who want to be closed groups, but we really value evangelism. We want, again, the value of evangelism installed in every single leader in every single group. So who does this leader have on his or her heart that needs Christ? What is he or she doing and in terms of taking a next step with that person? Are they having any God conversations with lost people? And then in terms of reproduction, who are they investing in? If I'm a coach and I've got a small group leader under me, one of the things that we're going to talk about as we meet together is, who's the emerging leader in your group? So when your group gets big enough, you can spin them off and they can start their own group, or you can release this leader to go and start a group. And again, we give great opportunities for this because at least once a year in these fall campaigns, one of the things that we're doing is asking our groups, would you consider releasing people from your group to go and just try leading for a short period of time? And again, we have found a lot of willingness from people to say, I'll try that for 6 weeks or 8 weeks. We're not asking them to commit for life. We're not asking them to be the leader of that group forever. We're just saying, would you go and facilitate this group for 6 weeks? And we're amazed how many people are going, yeah, I'll try that. Because we're giving them the opportunity, and it's a reproduction opportunity, because that leader then gets to cast the vision to that group to say, God has been at work in some of your lives, and God is now ready to use some of you to begin to lead other people. Would you be willing? We'll resource you. I'll be here to support you. But would you be willing to go now and take another group? Or is there a person that you ought to be investing in? And again, that's a measure of effectiveness and success within our system. Let me just close by giving this statement. Oh, well, let's see, we got to back up and do worship. The last one is worship, and the question is this. How are you helping your leaders to authentically model a surrendered heart and a life of worship? How is that value, how is that purpose of God being lived out in the life of that leader? And that then becomes how we measure effectiveness, is against those five purposes, against that area. So, you know, things here we talk about are, is there an area of struggle that this leader needs to surrender? How are they growing in their personal devotion and personal worship time, private worship? And again, we hope then that these become not only questions from a coach to a leader, but they then become also the framework, in a sense, for what the leader does to develop his own group. The most important thing that you give to those who lead are roots and wings. The ability to grow on their own, establish a foundation in their life that helps them to be a learner for life, and then you give them wings to try it. We are really big about nudging people out of the nest with simple, achievable opportunities that are low bar that help them begin to gain leadership experience, to just try something, to say, would you just try this? Would you just do this for a week? Would you assume this role? Would you take this group for a short-term period of time? And we have found that by doing that, people begin to grow and their leadership confidence begins to build, and they then are on the track of leadership development. All right, I think we have about 10 minutes for a little Q&A, so I'm happy to dialogue about some of this. Yeah, right here. Well, there's a couple of things. One of them is that, going back to our principle of trying to find that which is organic, we try to give them bite-sized leadership roles actually within group life. So again, it's not necessarily a formal apprentice type role, but it is to lead a certain thing. Maybe to lead the group while the leader's on vacation the next 2 weeks. It may be to assume the role of leading worship for the group that night. So it's finding bite-sized roles that they can take. The other thing that we do is we ask leaders to go and lead short-term groups. Is another great step for a person to actually kind of lead their own group. And we talk about leave and lead, that you leave your group and lead. Now, one thing that we've found too, and it helps a little bit with the kind of the complexities of multiplication, is we say to that person, you're not leaving this group forever. Would you go, though, and lead this group for 6 weeks, and your goal in that 6 weeks is to find an emerging leader in this new group who will become the leader of that group, and then at the end, you go back to your former group, but you coach now the new leader that you've raised up in this 6 weeks. So trying to get them to take an initial step of leading a short-term group. Now, here's another way. This is the most bizarre way we do this at Saddleback. We do these things called a connection. And last year in October, Pastor Rick will stand up and say, one of the core values of our campaign, if you really want to get the most out of this, is you've got to be a part of a small group for these 6 or 8 weeks. And if you're not in a small group, we want to ask you to sign up. And what we're going to do is every night this week on our campus, we want you to come to the night that is convenient for you to meet. And we're going to launch small groups. Now, ideally, what we want is we want a leader seated at that table when that person comes in. So when people come in that night, let's say they come in on Monday night, when they come into the room is divided by geography and affinity. So that if you live in Aliso Viejo, you go sit in this part of the room, and if you're looking for a singles group, you go sit at that table. Now, ideally, we would like at every table, every night, to have a seated leader. We don't have it. So you know what we do? We sit down with that group of 8 or 9 people. We lead them through some kind of community building questions where they get to know each other. We lead them through the first lesson in the curriculum. And then at the end of the night, we say, now who's going to lead the group? And they're looking around at each other and thinking, okay, somebody here's a leader. And we say, you may be at a table where there is no leader. You guys tonight get to pick the person who's going to facilitate for the next 6 weeks. So we actually let them pick the person who will facilitate. Now, they're not a leader at that point. We don't call them that in our system, but we will let them facilitate. It's not ideal, but when we've had, like last year, launched 230 groups, it is what we did. And then if they stay in that group and the group decides to continue on, then the leader has to go kind of through the leadership training and being qualified. But for that 6 weeks, we will let them facilitate. You say, well, don't you get into some real problems? Oh, yes, we do. And we've had some people selected to lead who didn't have any business even facilitating. And we've stepped in and dealt with that when it was appropriate and when we needed to and when we had to. But we have said, we're willing to at least let you get started. And so we have let a number of people who didn't come that night planning to lead, that walked away that night ending up leading. Now here's what we found amazing is, again, 71% of those 230 groups that we launched decided to continue on at the end of the 6 weeks, which is a pretty high percentage of stick rate considering how fast they were launched. So all that to say, we have made it easy for people to get in the game. It does create some complexities when you do that, but we believe that the trade-off is worth it. And we'd rather manage the conflict of the complexities than keep them out. And so that's what we've chosen to do. Yes, ma'am. We've kind of taken a couple of stabs at that. We have typically not done childcare, and the reason we don't is because when they go to their group the next week, we're not providing childcare then either. So we ask them basically to find a babysitter or some kind of childcare that night, and then the group then will decide how they handle that, but they only meet on campus the first night. Week two, they go to somebody's home. And so before they leave that first night, they've got a roster with everybody's name and all the phone numbers, who the facilitator is going to be, and at least where they're going to meet the next week. That's what, and the curriculum. But that's what they walk away with. So we haven't typically offered childcare, because if we offer it then, it's likely to be a problem the next week when they go to a home as well. And so we've decided just to go ahead and face that issue right from week one. Go ahead. We have landed partly because of just the size and who, you know, if you only have so much energy and time, it's where you're going to spend it. And we have landed on really helping new, teachable, open, and let the other kind of go on autopilot, quite frankly. And what happens is, practically speaking, is like our coaches will have contact with those groups. So one, we want to know what's going on. They can't just be maverick and, you know, out teaching Mormonism or something. So we want to know what's going on in the group, and we will intervene if we feel like it's unhealthy. You know, we've had a couple of situations where the group got into, you know, it became a business venture for some people with multi-level marketing, and they saw the small group as a great opportunity to build that. And, you know, okay, so in that group, no autopilot. We step in, we intervene, we'll do something. But if the group's healthy and they are kind of embracing the core values, we will let it sort of float. Where we're pouring our energy and time is in those people who are new leaders, who are hungry to learn, who want to be mentored, who are looking for coaching, and who have a high felt need. I mean, they are almost week to week going, you guys have got to help me keep my head above water with this. You know, I don't know what I'm doing, or I'm so new in this, I don't know. I've only been a Christian a couple of years. Here's a question I don't know what to do with. And we're finding that when our coaches get that kind of leader, we have a lot of success in developing that leader. And so that's where we're pouring our energy. Part of that's just because we can't pour it everywhere in our particular system. So if I have to choose, that's where we are putting it. So, all right, third row back right here.
You mentioned about how you try to celebrate your leaders and raise a guy. Practically,
Well, for our whole congregation to know, about the only way we do that is through stories. And we do it off of our weekend meetings and services. So that often what we'll do is we'll highlight a leader's testimony or what's happening in that group. Or if we do a little video clip with interviews, we've done several times where we actually go to the group meeting with a video camera and we tape something that night and then it gets played on the weekend. Well, that does two things. It raises the value of group, but it also honors the leader. And so that's one way. We do it through also other communication pieces. Like we have now just gone away. We have really gone to a minimal weekend bulletin kind of thing for our services. We now communicate to our people through an electronic thing that we call Slice. It's an email newsletter. And so in our email newsletter is another way for us to highlight story. And we highlight stories of groups. Sometimes it's, here's a group that went and did this particular, you know, inner city mission project. And highlights leaders. But another thing that we're trying to do is actually in the messages, in our weekend messages, apart from their personal story, but just championing the value of leaders and raising that up in the weekend messages. So those would be primary ways that we do that. Okay, I had one up here, and then we'll go over here and then back there. All right?
You had said that you were many times going into a small group setting to do leadership development. Can you tell us a little bit more
about how he's asking the question about how we go actually into the small group meeting itself to accomplish leadership development. And I would say that it is indirect first. We're not actually physically showing up. We're not plugging a tape in the VCR that says, here's how you develop leaders. We're looking for the more indirect ways. And the way we're doing that is through our curriculum. We are coaching people and leaders through the curriculum of things that they can do that do result in leadership development, like rotating leadership, like subgrouping, which is if the group gets too large to get more airtime for people to discuss, we subgroup. Well, one of the things that's a natural leadership development is you go lead that group of four for the next 30 minutes in discussion and prayer. Well, that's a leadership development tool that we use right in the group. So the curriculum becomes a big part of that itself. Sometimes in the video teaching, we will say things like, you know, some of you, God's been at work in your life in a long time. You've never taken a risk to lead. How about if, you know, for the next 6 weeks, you consider stepping out of your group to go and do that? Well, that's a leadership mobilization kind of tool that we do right in the group meeting. So we're not bringing them to the campus to do recruitment. We're actually doing that and, you know, raising the value of that and the vision of that right in the group itself. So that's kind of a little bit of our approach. Okay, we're going to take two more and then we'll break. Yes, sir.
A lot of churches that reproduce the classroom will equate that with discipleship. This kind of builds off of what you were talking in the previous session. Now, how does this all relate to your new emphasis on more discipleship and on the smaller groups? How does that feed into where's the classroom?
Well, and by... We use class in two different ways at Saddleback. Like we do class 101 to 401. Is that what you're talking about? Okay. Tonight I'm going to explain this more in our session of how the purpose-driven paradigm fits into our leadership model. But let me just say this about it. If you have kind of a funnel, I'll show you tonight. We have our weekend services, which is where the vision is cast and the values are set and the theological parameters are established. The next level down in the funnel is class 101, 201, 301, and 401, and that is a four-hour class on each of the purposes. The purpose of class is for orientation and assimilation. Its purpose is to orient our people to the purposes of God and how we do church here at Saddleback and how they then can go deeper. The next level down is group life. And the class system is not about discipleship as much as it is really about orientation and a commitment to pursuing discipleship. But what we have said is that discipleship gets delivered at Saddleback primarily through the small group. And so what we want to drive them to is they may come the first time to a weekend service, then we want to drive them to class so that they get oriented to the life of our church. But then the next step is we want you to be in a group life, and week in and week out, that's where our hope is that you're really going to get the discipleship mechanism. And then within group life itself, then we even break it down further to like spiritual partners, to where there's life-on-life mentoring that is going on as well. And so it goes from the mass on the weekend to class, which is, you know, a couple hundred people in a class once a month, down to a small group of 10 to 20 or 25 people, down to life on life. ultimately, so that at the bottom of the funnel, what comes out is that in the DNA of a person who attends Saddleback Church are the five purposes of God in their life. And that's kind of the strategy for how we push it down the funnel from the macro down to the micro. Okay, one final question, Steve. Okay, so go with that again now. I'm sorry.
How do we get them interested and even get involved in cell groups if they are already mature in their faith?
Well, for us, it would be because the cell group is not about maturity only. The way we do it is by, I think, strongly trying to cast the value of biblical community, and that isolation is not an option for a Christian, and individualism is an American value but not a biblical value. And so therefore, if you want to be a New Testament follower of Jesus, you have no option but to be in relationship. And in our church, it's impossible for you to be in meaningful relationship by only coming on the weekend. And that meaningful relationship does happen best in the context of small group community. And, you know, the model that we talk about from our church is that when you look biblically, the model out of Acts 2, 5, and Acts 20 is they met, you know, in the temple and then met house to house. So there was a large corporate kind of setting, and then there's something that resembled a small group setting, whether it's, you know, 2 or 20. There's something where there was a high relational value that went on. And so for us, it's about casting the value of biblical community. And I think some people mistakenly think that small group is about Bible study only. And we're trying to, you know, reorient to say, no, small groups, cell groups in our church are about all five purposes, not about one. And so, and every one of us need that. And it's an expectation. I tell you, another thing that we do is we're trying to model is that our staff, who, you know, hopefully are somewhat mature, are also experiencing that and sharing the value of it in their lives. So that through what our staff are experiencing and modeling, then the value gets cast also for the whole church. So, all right, thanks again so much for being here. And we're going to take a break. I think it's about lunchtime. So, again, if you want to dialogue, I'll be up here at the front.